for taking a ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization that is aimed at developing the black community to reach its highest potential with a focus on economics and education with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. Once again, that's pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Go on there, listen to your favorite shows, get to know the guests, get to know us better, and you know, vibe out with the Freedom Train. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We got a new Twitter and Instagram handle. It's Freedom Train Network. So, well, put it like this, because Twitter is a little different. So for Instagram, it's Freedom Train Network. For Twitter, it's Freedom Train, Freedom Train Net. So make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook is still Freedom Train Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play Music at the Freedom Train Podcast. And we get down how we get down. Pat.
What up?
What it look like?
It look like two old people French kissing in mayonnaise.
That's not nice. Yeah. That sounds ugly. That's a guy. What's going on with you today, man?
Not much, man. Just chilling. Just chilling.
Yeah, man.
That word, that would need to be two eyes. But that
yeah, you spelled it Chileans.
Yeah, I did.
Them Chileans.
Chilean. Whatever, I'm good.
Man, so before we jump into our topic, man, we got to make sure we're doing better with our youth, man. So I'm doing a class. I'm talking about healthy relationships, sex, and domestic violence. And young girls are asking about, you know, people they should hang with. No, they brought it up, hey, thoughts and stuff like that. You know, the word that they use now, the new word they use for hoes, right? And so, you know, the girls was like, you know, what if your friends is thoughts that you hang around them? So, you know, I'm telling them, hey, I'm not telling you to throw people away, but some people you just can't be around. And some people you do got to straight up eliminate from your life, but you can't be that. And one of the girls basically got offended because, you know, I was saying for being a thought, being around, especially if you're somebody that's trying not to be that, but being around, trying to be progressive and trying to be around people who are not trying to be progressive ain't going to work, no matter what type of things. But you can't, you also can't refer to yourself as a thought or a hoe or a bitch or a slut. Like, that's not black women, like, that's not the shit that you should be referring to yourself as. And it's everybody's fault. It's black America's fault for buying into the negative stuff that is put out. So I just went, you know, just put this negative in our minds, man. We got to be careful of what the hell we feeding into our children's brain, because that long term outcome not gonna be what you like.
You ever notice how words that start out negative or as insults always seem to at some point be applied to our kids? Usually seem to apply them to themselves and try to take the negativity off of it. You know, like I'm thinking about in terms of a lot of the words that used to be negative, and, you know, using a bunch of bad words here, but, you know, you think about bitch, I'm a bad bitch, you know, that came around. Nigga is a classic example. You know, you got thoughts popping off now, hoes. You know, like, all of these terms that used to be insults. Like, what's going on in our community that our kids think it's cool to call themselves these bad, you know, these negative terms, to label themselves that way?
Right. But it is, because the foundation was laid by the generations before them, that it's acceptable because we accepted that shit. And that's the problem, though. And it's like, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, no matter how much I tell them, they're going to go home and the reinforcement going to be something different. And that's the frustrating part. Because it's not like, it's some of them, like, it was only one in particular who tried to defend Ben Fott. But the rest of them were like, okay, well, some of this at least makes sense. But when they go home, is it going to be reinforced? It's the stuff I said going to be reinforced. And I'm not trying to say I know it all. But as a dude, I know how we treat girls who don't respect themselves. We use them and they get thrown away. But that's not how we supposed to be relating with each other. That's not healthy.
Well, I mean, but you don't even have to know it all to know that a young girl calling herself a thought and being proud of it or challenging somebody who tells her she's not a thought is a problem. Like that, I don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that that ain't the right way that she should self-identify. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, let's be real.
Right.
A
right.
girl self-identifying as that hoe over there.
Right. And it's like, because, you know, I'm telling them, all right, if you're a girl and you hang around girls who just have sex with people just because you're putting yourself in a potentially dangerous situation, because she gonna be like, I got my home girl with me, and he gonna bring a friend, and friend gonna be expecting the hunch.
But you know, I actually know a few young and grown women who will go ahead and hunt your dude so that they friend can hunt his friend. We saying,
yeah, right. I know, right? But that's my word, though. But it's like, but them some fucked up friends, though. Like, my friend shouldn't put me in that situation. Like, you not my damn friend if that's the situation that you put me in. Because if my option is, all right, well, I need to be a ride or die, so let me go ahead and get this dude some who I really don't want to give none. I'm going to go ahead and do something with him just because. But, like, what if this girl really don't know how to, because that's a self-esteem issue, so what if she really not up on protecting herself and dude got something and now you 16 and you got HIV?
And really, it's a self-esteem issue all the way around on both sides of the equation.
Right.
But, you know, because any dude that's just going to run up and hunch on anything, he got the same self-esteem issues that a female
right.
that's going to run up and hunch on anything got. You
right.
know, it's just social standards to being what they are. You know, it's I'm not even going to say a whole lot more in today's day and age, but it's a little bit more tolerable for a dude than for a female. And, you know, you can't say a whole lot more nowadays because it is becoming more and more tolerable as each year passes for a female to be out there just like a dude used to be. And it's not cool in any situation, but we got to deal with the fact that, you know, we don't really value our kids the way we should. We don't value our future generations the way we should. We got people out here now, they're giving birth, having babies, doing all of these other things, and they don't, you know, they aren't in a position to where they're ready to be a parent. They still want to do the things they want to do. And as a parent, I will say you can do what you want to do with kids. You just got to do it a little bit different. You know, you got to plan a little bit more. But it's not to say you can't still live your life. You just can't, you can't just make a snap decision and go do something. You got to figure it out a little bit. But I think the fact that we have so many people out there that don't really truly value their children, that don't truly value the future generations. You got a lot of people now, I'm in certain circles where I'm listening to older generations consider younger generations competition. You know, stuff like that shouldn't be going on.
Right. Right. But see that, and those are the things that I was saying, you know, especially like the competition thing. Like that right there is so crazy. But also one of the things I was telling them is, as black women, you're already not valued in the world. So it's imperative for you to value yourself and learn how to value yourself, because the world doesn't value you. You go missing all the time and nobody cares. Your people go missing all the time. Nobody cares. They found football jerseys before they found 129 girls.
Man, I don't even want to. Bro, I'm so hot with that whole subject. I turned the radio station on my way home earlier today because they interrupted talking about politics and a couple of other things to talk about the FBI finding Tom Brady raggedy-ass football jersey. Why is the FBI investigating the disappearance of Tom Brady's football jersey?
Right.
We ain't got nothing else more pressing going on. It's damn near 300,000 missing, or what, damn near 200,000 missing black people over there. Actually, it's 220,000 missing black people, and they choose to focus on finding his football jersey.
Hey, man, look. And, you know, and that's one of the things I was trying to get across. I mean, they vet, like, first of all, white men are the pinnacle in this society. So they value white men over anything else. But a motherfucking, first of all, fuck Tom Brady. Second of all, a motherfucking football jersey, because they found two football jerseys, like, to waste resources for that. That's the NFL's job to find that. That should be local police. But you got actual human beings missing, and nobody gives a shit. But yeah, football jerseys.
That's Tom Brady's job. When my clothes go missing, I can't call the cops. Don't nobody, you know, like, who the fuck I'm going to call if my shirt go missing? What make Tom Brady so special? It ain't like he need the jersey. He got the money. It ain't like he finna sell it. You know what I'm saying?
Value
be damned. Fuck all that, man. You racing valuable resources to find a football jersey, and there's people getting killed, murdered, starving, homeless, beaten, abused, and all these other. Man, that it got me so hot, man. I turned on, got down 2 chains in the car. I'm sorry, we off topic.
Man, look here, man. We're not off topic because it segues into what we really want to talk about the number of missing people, missing black people in America. But, I mean, it's so imperative for us to learn and love ourselves so we can teach our damn kids to love themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a must. Black America, that is a must. You were doing yourself and your children a disservice when you're continuously having kids and you're not loving yourself. That shit rub off on your kids. This ain't no generational curses. We're not making changes. Ain't no damn curses. It's people not making changes. So I just want to get that off my I ain't through venting about that, but I just want to
It's all relevant in the theme of the discussion. You know what I'm saying? A young girl growing up thinking it's okay to call herself a thot has the same type of devalued system around her as the young girl that goes missing and nobody cares. You know what I'm saying? It's all connected. It's all right there. You know what I'm saying? So I don't see how we can, and I don't like the term generational curses either. I feel like generation after generation, people continue to make the same decisions. And so, you know, the decisions lead to the same actions, the same results. That's not a generational curse. That's you making the exact same decisions, even if you think you're, because I found recently that a lot of people do think that they've made, quote-unquote, different decisions than their parents or other people have made. But then when you ask them questions about the decisions made by older generations, they can't answer them. So how do you know that you've made a different decision if you never even bothered to get information about the decisions that the generations before you made? And so you.
But see, that was one of my main things that I was trying to get through to them, and like me and the other two adults are trying to, you know, say to them without making it a debate and without getting to the point where they think we're talking at them. But we're not telling you what we think like y'all doing. We're telling you all what we know, what we've seen, what we've experienced, what we've watched other people go through. You can't be the, like, the girls who were hunting everybody in high school, they got a lot of, a lot more responsibilities on their plate than a lot of the other women. A lot more responsibilities on their plate. Everything didn't turn out all peachy keen. Everything didn't turn out like the movies did. This is not a movie. This is real life. When you have sex, feelings get caught up, condoms come off, people don't pull out, kids are made, all these other things. It's a lot more to it. Like the young girl was like, well, I don't really have sex with them right now. They just give me stuff. They give me snacks and juices and all these things. And I just get stuff from them. And I'm like, well, okay. And you know, it's only a matter of time if they want something in return. And one girl was like, nah, I'm not gonna let them want that. You can't stop somebody from wanting something. But it's the inexperience that they have, but nobody is able to reinforce positive messages to, not all of them, but just a couple of them. You tell nobody's reinforcing positive messages. I mean, that is not how we should be laying the foundations for our kids, for them to think that this is okay behavior. And another thing I was telling them, I was like, look, what we're doing now is we're uplifting the worst of our culture. Mm-hmm. Like, most white people that like you, they like the worst of your culture. And they like for you to exhibit the worst of your culture. And if you don't do that, then you're not a real black person. Because that's how they see you, as people who exhibit the worst.
And that's true even in terms of, like, when you do hear people, you look at what's categorized as acting white and acting black. And I don't even, like, I don't give black people flack for that, because honestly, I don't feel like those categorizations came from the black community. I feel like those categorizations came from outside of the community and permeated into the community. And now, like so many other things in the community, they're kind of a staple of the community. But when you run into all of these negative associations with being black, what it means to be black, this, that, and the third, you know, if you ain't hood, you ain't black. If you ain't this, you ain't black. And again, I say, none of those things originated within the community. All those things originated from expectations and prejudices and predispositions that other people had about us that we accepted onto ourselves. But, you know, without a proper means to counteract those things, because you don't have very many positive, intelligent people, but black people especially, that are broadcasting opinions to the youth. You know what I'm
right.
saying? And if they are, they're not doing it in the manner that the youth can receive. You know what I'm saying? So even if you, and that's where we run into this culture and this collective concept as well, because even if you're doing a great job with your kids, you know, around about the age of 9 or 10, parents stop being the dominant influence in their kids' life, and their peers become the dominant social influence. And in most peer circles, the baddest person is the most popular, most influential person.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's not enough to just worry about what you got going on in your house. You got to worry about what other people have going on in their house, the community, and as a whole. And a lot of these senses, I know I'm hitting on a bunch of different subjects at once, trying to hurry up and make a point, but I just feel like in a lot of these senses, we aren't looking at the entire culture as a whole that teaches us to devalue our blackness, and that teaches us to devalue our children the way that we continue to devalue them. Look, if we can look at statistics and see that there are 171,000 missing black children under the age of 18, and that not be a national cultural emergency for us.
But it's not because it doesn't disturb my bubble, and because it doesn't disturb my bubble, it's not that pertinent of an issue. It's not that bad an issue. Ain't nobody messing with my kids.
Right. And the other, and you know, when you say that, you make me think about all of the people out there who immediately jump to the conclusion, well, if your kid went missing, it's your fault. And then, you know,
right.
You read the stories, and it's like, well, a lot of these kids go missing. You know, they're taken from bus stops at school, or they're taken from school.
Your child can go to the mall with her friends. Your child can go to the mall with you, go to the bathroom by themselves, and you never see them again.
I mean, I was just thinking about today. Like, I went and found my kids out of school, all three of them, two different schools. Nobody asked for identification or verification of who I was. I'm here to sign out these people. They just called them down and sent them off. Is that easy to get access to your children?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just say that to say you can't automatically say that if a parent's child goes missing, it's automatically the fault of the parent, which I know is what a lot of people would say.
But, I mean, and that because that's easy, because we don't like thinking.
True.
And so it's so easy just to say, well, you know, I mean, you got to be bad parents that your kid's going missing. But it's not just children that's going missing.
No, it's not.
Look, this what the stats say. What said? Total black people, all ages. This is the NCIC missing person unidentified statistic, and it says 218,818. Total black people are missing in the U.S. And it's 2016 statistics. So, I mean, it's not just children that's going missing. Like,
yeah, I mean, the things are what, 48,000 black people over the age of 18 are missing. 48,000 over the age of 18. So you're right, it's definitely not children. And the other alarming part of that, something we were talking about before the show, is the fact that 35 or 36% of the people that are missing are black. I mean, look, we're only 12% of the population. So in an equation or in a situation where we're appropriately represented, we would be 12% of the missing people. We are 35 or 36% of the people missing. That should be a national emergency for us as a culture. That should be something we should be talking about in our schools, in our homes, in our churches. That should be something that we should just be relentlessly talking about nonstop.
Yeah.
But you don't have those conversations when you cool with the little girls running around calling themselves hoes and bitches, and the little boys is cool with running around calling themselves dogs and players.
You were still living in Tallahassee at the time. You remember the young lady Allie Gilmore? She went missing. I want to say 2003, 2004, no later than 2005, she went missing, and she hasn't ever...
I was gone by then.
Okay. Well, that young lady went missing around that, let's say 2004. Let's say she's been missing since 2004. Ain't nobody heard nothing since then. And they really ain't tried to find her. The black lady. I think she was pregnant as well. And they didn't really try to find her. Like, they still talking about JoBenet Ramsey.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because Patrice O'Neal had a special before he died, I think back in 2007 or 2008, where he had the whole first 15 minutes of his show, The Elephant in the Room, he was talking about the difference between the way they treat missing black people and the way they treat missing white people. You know, and he made it a joke, but like so many things in black comedy, you know, black comedians often speak from a perspective of truth.
Yeah, it's just people don't take it seriously because it's in a comedic form.
Right, but if you watch our black comedians over the past 30, 40, 50, 60 years even, you get a very accurate picture of what's happening within the community. I mean, that's like when black, you know, when it was a running long-term joke, and all the way going back as far as I could find, all the way back to the 70s, and I'm sure back in the 60s and 50s even, that the police was beating up, fucking up, and otherwise mistreating black people.
Oh, yeah. But I mean,
go ahead.
Now, I was just saying, but think about what, you know, Dr. Joy DeGruy talk about when she do her lectures on you know, the horrors that black people experienced, and like the way they experimented on black people as if they were like just lab rats. And then, you know, like they just experienced, they said black people don't feel pain. Like, you know, they say put a black child, like if you got some sickness in whatever, you put your feet on a black child's belly and it draw the sickness out of you, or the poison out of you, whatever. Like, they look at it, they've always looked at us as less than human, but it's we've become comfortable within our oppression. And because we're comfortable within our oppression, we are going to do whatever we have to do to make sure our bubble is not disturbed.
You know, it's interesting because back in, I'm looking it up now, 2006, I have the book. The book is called Medical Apartheid by Harriet A. Washington. And this book, basically the subtitle to it is The Dark History of Medical Experimentation on Black Americans from Colonial Times to the Present. And this book basically is what it says it is. It details all of the gruesome, inhumane medical procedures and malpractices and other experimentations done to black people on behalf of the medical establishment, some of which did create a lot of the medical breakthroughs that we live with today, but all of which, you know, were done in extremely inhumane and abusive manners.
And right.
And so you think about that.
That shit ain't cool.
I always laugh when I hear people say, get over it. And then you ask them, well, what should we get over? And they only know, what they know is the tip of the iceberg. They don't have any idea,
man,
the depth of what has been experienced.
But the people who saying that, like, what they don't understand is, like, let me experiment on your fucking family and see how you get over it. Because once again, that's that bullshit that people live with and that people be with. I mean, you can't be the person who, well, white people can, they can't afford to do it because it's not happening to them. But we can't afford to not pay attention to that. We can't afford to just want to get over stuff. We can't accept those stories from people because it's still affecting us, whether we see it or not.
But I mean, that's one of the things you think about when you think about the historic mistrust. Right now, you know, black people, not only are we less likely to have insurance, but we're also less likely to go to the hospital. And if you talk to a lot of the people, in low-income environments and stuff like that, it's not necessarily because they can't pay, even though that's a portion of it. A lot of it is they don't trust the doctors. And
right.
that distrust is genetic, in my opinion. That's when we get into this, the discussion of epigenes. But it's the same type of genetic distrust that we have with police officers.
Look, I do know my mom went to the hospital once, like in the early 2000s. And they said a mistake, but they took DNA from her that they wasn't supposed to take. They clipped pieces out of her that they wasn't supposed to do and made it seem like it was all mistakes and stuff. So, you know, I understand. I get people when it comes to that mistrust of the doctors. But if you're going to mistrust the doctors, you got to live healthy.
Well, that's the missing component that we got
right.
to talk about. And I do
right.
think we definitely need to spend more time as well as creating our own medical procedures and medical facilities and medical blah, 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 so that if we do distrust the established medical whatever, you know, we have these other medical practices to fall back on that are of our own making. Because, you know, like right here in Charlotte or in North Carolina, they got this running thing now where these women, low-income women, weren't notified of oddities in their cervical examination for, I think it was like 8 or 9 months. You know, this is 180 women weren't notified of problems with their cervical screenings for 8 or 9 months. You know, these things could have been anywhere from anything from cervical cancer to various other things that could have been represented by these oddities. And these women were just not notified. And then you go back a little bit further, again, here in North Carolina, and you find that there was a period in time where the social workers would make recommendations about people that should be sterilized, and they would get sterilized when they went to the doctor for routine checkups.
Yeah. And people not knowing what's going on, and black people been taken advantage of for the longest because white people don't give a shit about us. And that's what we need to understand. And when we, I ain't got made no disclaimer. White, if you're a white person and you ain't doing nothing bad, you shouldn't be mad. But white supremacy.
If you don't fit, don't wear it. You know.
Yeah, that's why I say fuck that disclaimer.
All crazy about when black folk talking all crazy about other black folk, and I know that they ain't talking about me or nobody in my circle. I don't take that personal. You know what I'm saying?
Like, but it's like we got to understand, man. Like white people been stepping on us since first fucking contact. Like people got to study the history. They didn't. That common peace shit was bullshit. It was set up. They sent the missionaries in to study the people, to study everything, and then after they studied everything, they came in and slaughtered and destroyed. Like, I just did an On the Shoulders of Giants of Truganini, and Truganini was one of the last full-blood Tasmanians, alive, and they exterminated all of the Tasmanians, all of the full-blooded Tasmanians, every last single one of them were exterminated. Like, and they're not the only group of like African descent people who've been exterminated on this planet. And we gather more and more information as we go, but we need to understand this stuff. They never gave a shit about us. They do not care about us, and they will destroy us. That's why so many black people, think about what we just said. For all races, 2016 statistics, and this is the FBI statistics, 218,818 black people total have gone missing. And we don't even know this. They told us 64,000 black women have been missing. But you're still missing a whole bunch of other black people who still missing.
Mm-hmm. But we, again, that's why I say we got... But, you know, another part of that is we keep looking to other people to give us our information. You know what I'm saying? We keep... Nobody seems to want to take the onus on themselves. Again, even with the kids, you know what I'm saying? And I'll be the first to admit, I'm not as active in schools and other communities where black children are housed as I used to be, and I'm definitely working to change that. But everybody's looking for somebody else to volunteer to fix the situations prevalent in our society. Again, I'm more disturbed by the fact, you know, I'm not gonna say I'm more disturbed, but I'm definitely very disturbed by the fact that, you know, you can get on this show and tell us an incident that you had recently of a young black girl arguing with you because you told her she not a thot. Are you serious? Right. You mad at me for telling you you're not a hoe?
Right. But this is the environment that should been set up because we've learned to not value ourselves.
I don't know. I mean, and it's very similar to the argument you get from people that want to say, that really are desperately want to use the term nigger. You know what I'm saying? And they come up with all kinds of stories about how nigga is different from nigger and this, that. No, it's not. White people in the North said nigger because they enunciated. White people in the South said nigger because they didn't. You say nigger because you're in the South, and that's what the white slave owners, the white Southerners called you, a nigger. So there's no difference when you're talking about the definition and the meaning of the word. Now, we could get into all this about niggas and all of these other terms that people want to use. That's all fine and good. I'm not arguing that one way or another. But niggas and nigger and nigga, those are not, like, those don't sound, you know what I'm saying? Like, those are not the same. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's the exact same argument you have when you argue with young boys and young girls about not using the term nigger. You know, it's the same argument you have, and I'll never forget the first time I realized that hip-hop, and I know I'm shifting discussion, but I'm going to bring it back in a second. I'll never forget the first time I realized the true impact of hip-hop when you're at a concert and you see thousands and thousands of white kids, thousands of them. More white kids in the audience than black. They look like salt with a sprinkle of pepper. And they all reciting the words. And they all get to the one spot in the song where the artist inevitably says nigga, one of the millions of times he's going to say nigga during the show. And they all stream right through it.
Yeah.
And the artist is on stage cheering them on and blah, blah, blah. And you got white people and black people in the room and everybody's all excited. My niggas go blah, blah, blah. It's the exact same thing you're seeing now with the term thot when you hear it all over the songs and on the radio and everywhere else. Now you go to these same concerts. Now not only are you hearing people scream out niggas, you hearing them scream out thot. You hearing them scream out baddest bitch. You hearing them scream out all of these negative derogatory terms that they really shouldn't be applying to themselves. And the term becomes cool in their little circle, but to the outside world, it means something different.
Yeah, and what we have to get our kids to understand is your small circle doesn't define the environment that you exist in, because you have no power and no resources.
True.
And you are only buying into the same bullshit that you don't like.
True.
Because let's just, like these same girls, like, when the dude actually call you a thot, a bitch, and a hoe out your name, it's not cool no more. Now it's an issue, but when you were treated like a bitch, a hoe, and a thot, like when you were when men actually treat you like that and then throw you away, now men ain't shit. No, the environment that led you here ain't shit. But that's the long term shit that we have to explain, and adults have to understand. Like, you just can't let teenagers just do any fucking thing that they want to. You can't do that. But you have to set a good foundation for your kids to be able to learn to love, because this is a cold ass world, and they gonna learn so much negativity. So they got to have that positivity coming from somewhere, and you can't have your young girls thinking that it's okay to be hoes. That's not okay. We don't love them hoes. That mindset hasn't changed.
And that's probably the most accurate statement that I've ever seen in the hood, is the fact that we don't love them. What we don't. But I mean,
nobody loves hoes. Even women don't love hoes.
But we got to get to a point where we realize that being a good parent is not just, and caring about future generations is not just about what you can give them, but it's, you know, and what you allow. But it's also about what you don't allow, what you don't give them. You know, those things have just as much impact. You know, you don't have to condone foolery in order to be a fun or exciting or whatever type of parent you ascribe to being. And at the end of the day, I think as our generation, because I'll be honest, I'm not very proud of my generation as parents. And I'm just speaking off of what I see. Obviously, if you're in my generation and you're a good parent, more power to you. I think I'm a good parent. Could I be better? Sure. But as a whole, when I look at the types of kids that are growing up now, the types of kids that we're interacting with, you know, the types of environments, even amongst the kids that aren't so-called ghetto, so-called hood, you know, millennials are, look, bro, and I'll never get away from this statistic that said, I think it was either 25 or 35% of black millennials, black kids 25 and under, believe that white people face just as much, if not more, racism than black people do. Are you serious?
Yeah, that's just so, and I mean, because, you know, well yeah, you know.
But that just goes to speak to how warped their views are, how much they are not being educated and informed, and how much they're being left to formulate their own opinions about critical things in the world, which is how you end up with girls calling themselves hoes and thots.
That's what their parents passed down to them, that racism ain't real no more.
Well, I guess their parents are passing down that same shit about it's okay to be a hoe, too.
Right. But see, the thing is, you know, parents uninformed that racism has evolved. Racism evolves with the times. But we can still find current stuff about black people being hung from trees and all type of stuff, black people being mutilated and all these things by white people. So stuff really hasn't changed. Racism just got more sophisticated as time is going on.
And even that's somewhat debatable, because a lot of what we've been seeing lately is straight overt 1880 racism. Like straight up, you know what I'm saying? I don't even care about being sophisticated or subtle with it. You know, this is in your face. I don't like you, and you're not as good as me.
But we got this. But it's, you know, once again, it's imperative for black people to love ourselves. It's imperative for black people to respect ourselves, and it's imperative to pass that down to the state. Stop fucking concentrating on passing down curses and pass down some real shit to your kids that's gonna help them be better, productive, safer black people in America.
But that, I mean, Joe is slowly losing hope, and because nowadays what we're finding is too many people are scared to have the conversations amongst themselves with their friends. You know, so if you're not even going to have a conversation with your friends, what the hell make us think you're going to have a conversation with your children? You know what I'm saying? And again, all of these avenues lead back to a devalued future generation, a future generation that's going to disassociate themselves with blackness, that's going to associate success and intelligence and positivity with whiteness, that's going to associate poverty and all these other things with blackness. That's, you know, and then when you have the kids that do go ahead and embrace their quote-unquote blackness, these kids will call themselves niggas, bitches, hoes, thots, and all these other derogatory terms. All of that stems from the fact that they're not getting any sort of self-worth or real value from the elders in their life. And that boils into the fact that we can, as a community, have over 200,000 missing people. We can be 12% of the population, but over 35% of the missing persons, and nobody seems to give a damn. Nobody seems to care. And we're not even going to get into whether or not they're organ harvesting, because in my opinion, that's a whole nother discussion. The bulk of it is we have over 200,000 missing people. Who cares what's happening to them? They're missing.
Right. Where's the value? Value. We have to value ourselves. We have to look at ourselves as valuable things. Like I was telling one of the girls, you know, I was going through my slide, and I was, there's a power and control wheel within the sexual violence prevention realm. So I was going through that power and control wheel, and, you know, talking about value within that power and control wheel, and because when you devalue, you're a commodity. And so I was explaining to the girl what a commodity is. You know, it's an item. It's a product. You're not a product. You're a human being. You're a woman. I told that girl, don't you ever call yourself a thot again. You call yourself a woman. But once again, look at what we're talking about, though. Look at what we're talking about.
Right. I mean,
if we're okay with our people going missing, we're going to be okay with our kids embracing being hoes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the chief example of what you just said, especially in terms of the women, Michelle Obama was called an ape in heels and a whole bunch of other things the entire time Barack Obama was the president. Did people come to her defense? Sure. But for the most part, it didn't really, you know, it didn't really stop. And then at by the end of the day, people just kind of embraced it. You know, you got all these YouTube videos of people calling, you know, saying she was a man, saying she was an ape, saying she was ugly, hideous, this, that, and the third. Then, 3 months into, or 2 months into Donald Trump's presidency, you have a few black entertainers who make some foul statements about Donald Trump's wife, and you have black elites running around,
saying, Steve Harvey.
Running around saying, that's wrong, that's out of place, don't talk about nobody's wife, blah, 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 blah. Where was that same defensive reaction, that same protectionism from, and I'm not just going to isolate Steve, because honestly, I don't know whether or not he did defend Michelle Obama, because I don't really watch Steve like that. But I am going to say, of the people that I did listen to, there was no massive defense of Michelle Obama when them white people were calling her a monkey, a ape, a man, and all these other things. There was no massive outcry. You know what I'm saying? You had a few black women and black women organizations and a few other organizations saying that this ain't right. But you definitely, it wasn't a national spectacle or nothing like that. But now you know, they make one bad statement and you do have a Steve Harvey running around talking about, don't talk about the man wife, don't do this, don't do that. Things get different when you talk about people's wives. Why didn't they get different for Obama? But in my opinion, that again illustrates not just that one scenario, but you even look at, they said Michelle Obama was inappropriately dressed for showing her arms and shoulders. Meanwhile, you got naked photos of Donald Trump's wife floating all over the place. All of that, again, showcases from the most powerful position
that you devalue.
In the devaluation of black women compared to other women.
Right. But, you know, my thing with Steve is, you know, Steve's so quick, like, he's very quick to defend these white people who don't like his ass. And, you know, I'm like you, I don't have no proof that he didn't defend Michelle. I'm almost certain that he did defend Michelle Obama. You know, I will say that I'm almost certain. But, you know, he don't have really a dog in the fight when it comes to defending Donald Trump. Now, I do agree, you know, with more so with the thing with Bow Wow than Snoop. Bow Wow don't, first of all, Bow Wow shut the fuck up. First of all, like, shut up, Bow Wow. Second of all, nobody follow Bow Wow going around talking about pimping out his, like, don't make no statements or threats talking about killing anybody that's associated with the president or anything like that. Like, don't do that. That's stupid. But the Snoop thing was more satire. I agree with, like, what DL said, you know, satire, even though people are not going to take it more than what it is. And you know, like, a lot worse has been said. Like, Obama has got, like, real death threats. So, you know, and of course, yeah, the people were arrested and things like that, but nobody came out and said, hey, don't make these death threats against Obama. I mean, and it's, once again, devaluing of our lives, and we even value white lives more than ours. We do. Black people do. And that's why we like Steve Harvey's and others. We work so hard. Now I'm gonna stop saying we, but they work so hard to be like white people. Because that validation.
I don't care for Steve Harvey, and I stopped caring for Steve Harvey after the Paula Deen situation. Every opportunity he get to defend white people, he's gonna defend them. That's what
he's gone down here since he cut his hair.
And then he, you know, he's been defending, you know, the way he's been with Donald Trump of late. Look, I'm not mad at Steve Harvey for going to the meeting, unlike most other people. What I am mad at Steve Harvey for is the apparent way that he's been bought off by the administration. You know, Professor Carlton Jones said in a conversation I was having with him that, you know, Steve Harvey was a watchdog for the Obamas, and now he's become a watchdog for the Trumps, which I can't find anything wrong with that statement. But I do feel like Steve Harvey is not somebody that I feel like Steve Harvey is selfish. He has his best.
Yeah, he's just trying to come up. He gonna hunch in the leg he got to come up.
Right. And so that's my beef with Steve Harvey. But I do use him as an example because he does defend white people a lot more than I think any black person should. The whole Paula Deen situation just, I completely wash my hands of him from that standpoint. But the standpoint of the defense of Donald Trump's wife versus the defense of Michelle Obama, I haven't seen a reaction to the things that were said about Michelle Obama like the reaction that I saw when things were said about Donald Trump's wife. And I'm not going to say that they didn't happen, but I am going to say that I didn't see them. And so that's my beef with that, and I think it does illustrate the difference in the value of a white life, a white woman, and a black woman. I think it really does. I think it illustrates, there have been so many different examples of it being illustrated, you know, that we could speak to outside of just the president's wives. But right now, that's a very powerful one because Barack Obama just left office and Donald Trump just got in office. And looking at the difference between the way those two women were treated, who essentially are in the exact same position, they're both just married to the president, you know what I'm saying? I think it's something that should be looked at and talked about, especially to young girls out there who feel some type of way. Who think that it's okay for them to label themselves as hoes, bitches, thoughts, and all these other things, and who feel like it's okay for them to devalue themselves.
Yeah.
And again, I want to, because I don't like one gender harping over one gender versus the other.
But black people don't value themselves, though. It's not. It's more glaring in black women. I say that. And that's why it's easily recognizable and identified as black women, because it's glaring. It's a spotlight on it. But black people as a whole don't value each other. We own it, like I can say it again, if it don't mess with our bubble, we don't care. Like we talked about with Emmett Till's mother. Emmett Till's mother didn't get involved into anything until Emmett died. All these other mothers, like Jordan Davis's mother said, I was in the room when she said herself, she wasn't involved in this stuff until he died. Because we don't value ourselves until it affects our bubble. And that has to change. Because that's how 200,000 of our people go missing and nobody cares. Nobody's talking about it.
Yep. That's that rugged individualism that we talk about all the time. And you know, we're sad to, like, black people don't have the luxury of being rugged individuals in America. You don't. You're a minority. To be honest, no minority group has the luxury of being a rugged individual in the society. That luxury is reserved for the majority in that society. It's reserved for them. The rest of the people in a society, if you're less than the majority, if you're less than 50% of the people in a society, you have to operate from the standpoint of collectivism in order to see the same types of benefits, perks, and come-ups that the majority sees. And that's
right.
The truth of the situation. We can't be rugged individuals. We can't wait for something to land on our doorstep because there aren't enough of us to come to, you know, to rally in defense of each other if we all play that waiting game. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And we could break it down so much further than that, but, you know, you really don't want the show to run forever. But at the end of the day, you know, we really have to get out of this mind state of, well, if it don't affect me, I'm cool. It don't affect you now. But it's going to, and the thing is, it doesn't affect you directly now. It does affect you indirectly, but it doesn't affect you directly now. So you can't, but that doesn't mean it's not going to directly affect you later. So anything that can be viewed as an indirect attack or indirect effect on your personal being should be viewed as a direct attack or a direct effect on your personal being. And nobody can give me a situation where something happening to a black person somewhere in America doesn't indirectly affect every other black person in America. It does. That's the way the system is set up. That's the way the cards fall when you're a minority in a situation. That's just the way it is. That's why, for those of you who are doubting it, that's why whenever a black person does anything and you're the only black person in your office, all of the white people come up to you to ask you what that black person was thinking.
Right.
That's the indirect effect. They view all minority people as the same.
The same.
The majority,
you represent your whole race.
All minorities is the same.
Right. Right. So, in saying that, that's why us valuing ourselves is very important. Now, you know, we don't care about how other people value or look at us, but we do have to understand the impact of how they view us.
Right.
But that collectivism helps improve. Collectivism and loving ourselves helps us improve our worldwide image, but also helps us protect ourselves.
Right.
It really does. Because they're killing us off, and they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. So, you know, not let the show roll on too long. But, you know, man, I just had to get that stuff off my chest because it's bothering me. And we just got to do better as people, as a whole. We have to do better. The African-American Authors Literacy Awareness Campaign is on tour, and they're making a stop this weekend in Atlanta, Georgia. So you can go to Facebook, to their Facebook page, the African American Authors Literacy Awareness Campaign, or AAALAC, AAALAC, and find out more about their tour. Like I said, the 25th of this month, this weekend, they'll be in Atlanta, Georgia. May 6th, they will be here in Tallahassee, Florida. So it's 30 authors from around the country who get to display their books. There's a tour, and if you want to be a part of that, make sure you visit the Facebook page to be a part of that. And if it's in your city, come out and support. Go support it. Go support it. Go support it. Go to PaxInc.org. Make sure you get our calendars and our codes of conduct and our African history within there. Go to OnTheShouldersOne.com. Get your copy of On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, North America. I just finished up first rounds of edits for Volume 2, Central America, so that's about to drop real soon. And I'm stripping, so I'll be at a city near you. My name going to be Night Heat, so look out for me.
Your name going to be what?
Night Heat.
Night Heat.
Yeah, or Midday Heat. I ain't really made my mind up yet.
Right.
Hey, man, like always, man, love yourself, love each other. Let's make sure we're doing what we need to do to get to where we need to get. Black power.